One day, this world system will crumble into ruin and burn. Here's Skip Heitzik to tell us how we can make sure we aren't a part of that ruin.
You want to be a nonconformist? You want to be a rebel? Don't love the world, because everybody's doing it. Well, the question naturally follows, how can I tell if I'm loving the world or if I'm loving God? It's not that difficult. You don't need to be a theologian to figure it out. Example, if you see a bird that quacks and waddles and swims like a duck, what is it probably? It's a duck. If you see a person that acts like the world with the value system of the world, it's probably because he or she is of the world. I don't care if they say they're of God. A tree is known by its fruit, said Jesus.
Make the connection.
Every empire the world has ever seen eventually came to an end. From the Roman Empire to the British Empire, from the rule of Napoleon to the dynasties of China, eventually even the greatest of empires crumbled into ruin and extinction. And yet, humanity continues to believe that no matter what happened in the past, this time things will be different and our modern empires will last forever. While a quick glance at the book of Revelation reveals that one day even modern-day empires will crumble in the face of God's judgment. And Skip Heitzik will start today's teaching on the connection here in just a moment. But first, we wanted to let you know that if you take the time to contact us for the first time today, we'll send you a free booklet from Skip called When Kingdoms Collide. Just call 1-800-922-1888 and let us know you're calling for the first time. Or you can write us at The Connection, P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. You know, nothing in life is permanent, and no matter what we build today, someday it will fall. There's only one exception to that rule, and it's when we build a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Stay with us here on The Connection to find out more.
And make the connection.
We'll continue our study today in Revelation chapter 18. So if you'll open your Bibles, we'll join Skip Heitzik as he continues this message.
We as Christians today need to take heed to what John said in his epistle, 1 John chapter 2. You're familiar with it. He said, "Do not love the world, neither the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever." It's interesting that the Bible encourages us to love, except it comes to one thing, and it says, don't love that. You're to love everybody, you're to love God, but don't love the world. Now, that doesn't mean don't love the environment. Don't love the trees and the clouds and the mountains. I think that a Christian can love the environment more than anybody else because he knows the one who made it. He can appreciate it on a greater, grander scale. So when God says, don't love the world, he doesn't mean don't go out and say, well, I love that tree. Oh, no, I love the world. When God says, don't love the world, he's not saying, don't love the people of the world. That would contradict the Bible, right? We're to love all men. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Love your neighbor as yourself, said Jesus. So when Paul or when John writes to Christians and he says, don't love this world, he's speaking about the system called the world. The godless system hostile to God with all of its value systems that would corrupt and hinder a person from following Jesus Christ. It's the system that is hostile to God. We have to guard our hearts against that. We have to steer clear of what would hinder our growth as a Christian. We have to filter everything through, will this give me a greater love for God, or will it hinder and diminish my love for God? Remember, Jesus gave that beautiful story about the sower who went to sow seed. And he said, some of the seed fell upon ground that was choked up by thorns. He said, that's the cares of this world that choke out the seed of the Word of God, and it becomes unfruitful. Unfruitful. The world wants to replace your love for God with love for itself. It will say, you're the most important one. Do it for you. Love you. And that's why Paul said, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Or as the Phillips translation says, don't let the world squeeze you into its own mold. Be a nonconformist. You want to be a nonconformist? You want to be a rebel? Don't love the world, because everybody's doing it. Well, the question naturally follows, how can I tell if I'm loving the world or if I'm loving God? It's not that difficult. You don't need to be a theologian to figure it out. Example, if you see a bird that quacks and waddles and swims like a duck, what is it probably? It's a duck. If you see a person that acts like the world with the value system of the world, it's probably because he or she is of the world. I don't care if they say they're of God. A tree is known by its fruit, said Jesus. Which brings me to the most important point. If you find yourself there, how about a switch today? Why don't you swap kingdoms? Swap Babylon for the kingdom of God. If you find yourself in that system, Jesus said, what does it profit a man if he gain the whole world but loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? You say, well, why should I do that? I'm happy the way I am. Because of what we read here, this kingdom of the world has weak foundations. It's going to be toast soon. It'll be destroyed soon. It will be no more soon. And God's kingdom will live and last forever and ever. Be like Abraham. It says of Abraham that he left his own city and he looked for another city that has real foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He became a pilgrim, so to speak. And if you dedicate yourself to God and his kingdom, then you're involved in a system that has no end. And long after this world is destroyed, you'll still be with him. There's a song we sing around here. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. And one of the verses says, the world behind me, the cross before me. Though none go with me, still I will follow. And when the world system is behind you and you follow the cross, it doesn't mean that you'll be abandoned. God will take care of you and God will bless you. But if your purpose is to glorify God and it's the cross of Christ and to win others to Christ, there's the kingdom on the other side of the cross, the kingdom of heaven. Verse 5 is sort of interesting in the light of the history of Babylon. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Remember what they said in ancient times when they were building the tower? They said, let's build a tower that reaches heaven. They didn't do it. Their tower didn't reach heaven, but their sins in the end will. They'll be so monumental they reach heaven. Let's now move to verse 9 and see the third phase of this chapter. It's the lamentation of the kings and the merchants. The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city, Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. And the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. Merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of most precious wood, bronze, iron, marble, cinnamon, incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots, and the most disturbing, the bodies and the souls of men. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more at all. The merchants of these things who became rich by her will stand at a distance for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine purple, or linen, fine purple, scarlet, and adorned with gold, precious stones, and pearls, for in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing." Every shipmaster and all who travel by ship, sailors, and many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance, cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, "What is like this great city?" They threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing and saying, here it is again, "Alas, alas, that great city, which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she is made desolate." Now, that's a long paragraph of mourning. That's sad. They're not rejoicing, they're sad as they see the fall of Babylon, this great and final city. Verses 12 and 13 is a partial inventory of the assets of this system. There's 28 commodities listed, and we don't have time to pick them all apart. But notice there's different kinds of jewelry, 4 different types of cloth, building material of every sort. Next on the list, luxury items like spices and perfumes. Then come food groups, and then finally labor and transportation. All of that fallen, all of that gone, all that keeps the world going economically, over. It will make the great stock market crash of, what, 29 seem like nothing. Children's play. And then it says, the bodies and the souls of men. Now remember, again, everybody's going to have to take a mark on their forehead or right hand to buy or sell. Their body and soul will be involved in this worship system and economic system of the Antichrist. In verse 17, it mentions shipmasters, those who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea. They stand at a distance, and a whole section is devoted to the fact that these traders or distributors by sea are lamenting. And perhaps that's an indication that it refers to the oil-rich countries whose great commodity is oil that isn't shipped. I mean, you can't fly it in an airplane. You have to send it by a boat. It depends on the shipping lanes of the world for the commodities to get out. And it says it's destroyed in 1 hour, and everybody sees the smoke of its burning at a distance. Notice the lamenting. It's in verse 9, 11, and then the last part, verses 15 through 19. 3 groups are crying: leaders, merchants, distributors. And notice what they're crying about. They're not lamenting over their sin. They're not crying for their soul. They're lamenting over their pocketbook, their wallet. Business is over. They've lost their customers. Their wealth and their investments are destroyed. Alas, alas, the great city is destroyed. My future is destroyed. Verse 14, I want you just to camp on that for a moment. It's a very foreboding and foretelling verse. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more. That's got to be the most miserable condition. Wanting, longing after something, and never being able to have it anymore. And they weep, and they weep, and they weep, and folks, the weeping will continue through all of eternity, as we'll see. Forever and ever, it will never, ever stop. Those who have banked on the world system and the pleasures of this life alone, apart from God, will forever weep and wail and mourn. That's what Jesus said. And there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, where the worm dies not and the fire is not quenched. That's why Jesus said, what does it profit you if you gain the whole world but you lose your own soul? I've told you before about Yusuf. He was the Turkish wrestler, 300-pound champion. His nickname was Yusuf the Terrible Turk. And he came over to the United States of America by ship in those days. That's how they got around. And he fought Strangler Lewis. And they had this huge wrestling match back east. Strangler was only 200 pounds, no match for 350-pound Hulk. And the winner, of course, went to Yusuf, this Turkish wrestler. Yusuf, when he won the prize, demanded the prize money, $5,000, to be given to him in pure gold. So they gave him gold nuggets, and he filled his money pouch with gold. Quite weighty. But he strutted out toward the docks in view of all of the press, with this gold, $5,000 worth of gold around his waist, marched onto the boat. They took off, and the boat got in a wreck. And the long and short of it, Yusuf had no recourse, no lifeboat, no buoy could hold him up, because the gold that he loved so much around his waist was the anchor that brought him to his death. And they never recovered his body. And that story, along with Revelation 18, remind me of what Proverbs tell us. Proverbs 11 says, riches do not profit in the day of wrath. What good is all this? Serving luxury when judgment is coming upon the earth. There's one final phase to this, and we'll close with it. Verses 20 through 24, there's a celebration in heaven, which kind of sounds weird. But let's read it and find out why. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. Then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city of Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found any more. The sound of harpists, musicians, flutists, trumpeters shall not be heard in you any more. No craftsman of any craft shall be found in you any more. The sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you any more. The light of a lamp shall not shine in you any more. The voice of the bridegroom and the bride shall not be heard in you any more. Can you imagine dating during the Great Tribulation period? Honey, I'm going to marry you and take you away from all this. Sad tragedy, it's impossible. For your merchants were the great men of the earth. For by your sorcery all the nations were deceived, and in her was found the blood of prophets and saints, and of all who were slain on the earth. Earth is lamenting, heaven is rejoicing. Who's singing? Who's rejoicing? We already met them in chapter 4 and 5, right? Four living creatures, 24 elders, tribulation saints, those who were martyred, this innumerable host from that come out of the great tribulation. They're all singing. They're all rejoicing. When you read about that, some of you might think, oh, that's kind of harsh. With all of the sad lamenting on earth, heaven is rejoicing. I think if you're a Christian, you can understand that. I think if you're a Christian, you have no problem understanding this. After all, the gospel and Jesus Christ have been humiliated for so long. God's children have been persecuted on this earth, those who are his children, for long enough. They've endured it. And righteousness and purity and justice have had enough abuse. Now it's over. Heaven rejoices. No more wickedness. Jesus is about to descend, and the heaven is exultant over the fact that Babylon is over. Verse 21 mentions a millstone being tossed into the sea. My mind goes to what Jesus said. He said, if anyone offends one of these little children, these followers of mine, it's better that you take a millstone hanging around his neck and throw him into the sea. Babylon has offended the whole world. This system has taken captive the souls of men, it says, and this is God's indictment against them. This morning, you are either a citizen of Babylon or a citizen of heaven. Either you are taken by the world system or you are a member of and a citizen of the kingdom of heaven. Your name is written on the rolls of God's book, the book of the Lamb, or on the customer logs of Babylon. I'm not saying that you can't be a Christian and be involved in commerce. That's nonsense. The idea is loving the system that would cause you to turn away from God. Loving and exalting yourself over the things of the Spirit of God. I want to close with a letter. It's anonymous. Don't know who wrote it, but it was at the end of his life. It's a guy who lived, obviously, for this world, and he has great remorse at the end of his life. Listen to what it says. Quote, how foolishly I have employed myself. In what delirium my life has been passed. How I've wasted my life while the sun in its race and the stars in their courses have lent their beams, perhaps only to light me to perdition. I have pursued shadows and entertained myself with dreams. I have been treasuring up dust and sporting myself with the wind. I might have grazed with the beasts of the field or sung with the birds of the woods to much better purposes than any for which I have lived. Isn't that a sad way to end your life? Now, let me quickly say that I have never, ever met any person who at the end of his or her life have wailed the fact or bemoaned the fact that they were too spiritual. I never heard anyone at the end of life saying, I feel so bad. I love God too much. I was too devoted to the things of the Spirit and to world evangelism and to the church and to his... I've never heard anyone say that. In fact, I was with a man last week. He looked at me. He's in his hospital, but he said, I'm about to go to heaven. I'm about to go home. Would you pray for me? And so I prayed that God would comfort him in the last days of his life before he goes to heaven. And when I said before he goes to heaven, he said out loud, soon, Lord, soon. He was ready. Babylon had no hold on him. His feet were already at the door threshold of heaven. People die wonderfully who live for God. People die miserably who live for themselves. It is, always has been, and always will be a fact of life. And so, Father, we are faced once again with a choice. Your kingdom, your values, or the disregarding of such, and the adopting of any other set that is opposed to you. And you always make it clear, you will have the last word, you will triumph, and those who follow you and love you will be in eternal enjoyment with you forever and ever, while those who reject your plan and say no to their Creator and go their own way in rebellion will not find the happy ending. It's the same truth over and over again, stated from the beginning to the end. And as we're faced with it this morning, Lord, I pray that anyone who's come into this service this morning who has not surrendered themselves to Jesus Christ wholly, totally, absolutely, would make a change, a switch today, to live for you, to enjoy you forever.
When your time comes, when death arrives at your door, how will you pass through? Miserably or wonderfully? It's your choice. You can live for yourself or you can live for Jesus. Which will you choose? If you'd like to talk with someone about what it means to choose to live for Christ and how you can make that choice right now, please call us at 1-800-922-1888. And speaking of helping people to choose to live for Christ, that's something you can help us do as a member of the Global Connectors. No, you don't have to travel as a missionary to have eternal impact on the lives of people all over the world. Here's more about joining in.
Africa is the second largest and second most populous continent in the world. It contains almost 15% of the world's population in its 53 countries, of which Uganda is one of the poorest. While Uganda may not be the largest or richest African nation, with your help, it can be the nation that will change the continent of Africa. When you join the Global Connectors, you'll be a part of a team that's changing the country of Uganda with the good news of the gospel, and that good news will spread across the rest of Africa. Join the Global Connectors today for just $25 a month and help us change the lives of the people of Uganda and the billion-plus people on the African continent. Just call 1-800-922-1888. Plus, as a member of the Global Connectors, you'll receive a new resource to download each month. This month, you'll hear a message on James 5 by John Bosco Tulett of Called Christians in Uganda.
Because when you stand firm and in truth and being faithfully, when that day comes, you are going to be the blessed one, which God said that, come in, you who are blessed by my Father.
Africa covers 6% of the world's surface, and you can help us change lives all across that area, starting with the nation of Uganda as a member of the Global Connectors. It's just $25 a month to join. When you do, you'll also receive that free message from John Bosco Tulett in Uganda. Just call 1-800-922-1888 to join the Global Connectors today or visit connectionradio.org.
And when you call us to find out more about becoming a Global Connector, you can also order a copy of today's teaching. It's available for just $6, which includes shipping, when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. Plus, if you contact us for the first time today, we'll also send you that free bonus booklet from Skip called When Kingdoms Collide. We want to let you know that we appreciate it when you take the time to get in touch with us here at The Connection, especially when you do so for the first time. So call us at 1-800-922-1888, or you can also write us at The Connection, P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection.
Next time, we'll examine one of the best marriages in all of history, and you're going to be a part of it. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.